welcome to Hero Hype, episode 38. Yes, we are back to talk about all of the TV and news from this week, and there are some good things to get talking about, so we're not gonna hang around this week introing and having a little bit of a laugh right beforehand. We really, really want to get into some of this stuff. So, as always, hi guys, I'm Danya, and I'm joined by my co-host Caitlin.
Hello.
And if you want to get hold of us at all, you can do so by contacting us on Twitter, which is at Hero Hype Podcast. You can send us an email at herohypepodcast@gmail.com, or you can leave us a comment on this post when it goes up on hyperball.com. But we're going to just blitz straight through a brief history because I really want to get to some of the news that we got from this week. So, continuing on with our very cold theme, Caitlin suggested that I do a brief history of Whitney Frost this week. And if you saw our Twitter account, I may have made an Ice Ice Baby joke and descended Caitlin into the madness of watching it on YouTube.
Word to your mother.
Right. A brief history of Whitney Frost. So, born Gailita Nefari, Whitney Frost was given up to the care and renamed by the Frost family under the guise of her having a better life, though it was partially because her father, Count Nefari, wanted a male heir. After discovering her true parentage, Whitney became the leader of the Magia and was sent to infiltrate Stark Industries, using Jasper Sitwell as her way in by seducing him. The plan backfired after she developed romantic feelings for him and was later involved in an accident that disfigured her face. She joined forces with Mordecai Midas and donned a gold mask, resulting in the codename Madam Mask. Midas later kidnapped Tony Stark, believing him to be an imposter and lookalike, and ordered Whitney to train Stark so they could replace its current leader and place the company under Midas's control. The plot, of course, failed, but Whitney and Stark began to develop feelings for each other. She was involved in several adventures with him before she revealed that she still cared for Sitwell, and they went their separate ways. Whitney eventually returned to Midas, who, still wanting to infiltrate Stark Industries, sent her back undercover as Stark's new secretary, Chrissy Longfellow. She and Stark became close once more, but things deteriorated when Count Nefaria became seriously ill. She captured Stark in order to coerce him into curing her father, but he refused. They fought, and Count Nefaria was believed to be killed in the crossfire, and they parted ways once more. She was later involved in an assassination attempt on Stark's life, and, whilst working with Obadiah Stane, had her mind switched with Stark's then-girlfriend, Bethany Cabe. The assassination attempt was thwarted, Whitney and Cabe's minds were switched back, and shortly afterward, Whitney was supposedly killed and replaced by a new Madam Mask. Basically, crazy, crazy, ridiculous, on and off again relationship with Tony Stark and a lot of ridiculousness.
Clearly.
Yeah, it's a little bit bonkers. It's definitely a comic book backstory. But yeah, figured we'd give you a little bit more background, seeing as things with Whitney Frost on Agent Carter are escalating very, very quickly, and it is a little bit different than the character that we're getting on the show. But yeah, she has some interesting links to characters that we have seen in the MCU, so thought it would be quite interesting for you guys to hear about what she was like in the comics. But let's get right into these headlines for TV news. So, not a lot in respect to different shows. However, what we did get was really quite cool. So, first things first, we got an Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. mid-season 3 premiere promo. And we also learnt the identity of Slingshot. So Natalia Cordova-Buckley is going to be playing Slingshot when the show starts back up again. This promo, I was actually quite impressed, considering the generic kind of synopsis that we got for the mid-season premiere. But, oh my god, Dead Ward is looking really dead.
Thank goodness.
It's really creepy. And Michal, who covers Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. for Hyperball, has started calling him Unward. And it's really quite funny. But yeah, so we get a lot of glimpses of new Inhumans. We get to see Slingshot in action a little bit. There's just, yeah, loads of really cool things coming up, but Ward looks creepy as hell. Did you watch this?
I did watch it.
Oh.
It still felt fairly generic, except for, like, the shot of dead Ward, but the rest of it felt like it could have come from any point in the season.
I mean, some of the Inhumans look kind of interesting. There was a dude with the really strange eyes, and there was Lincoln coming up against an Inhuman that seemed to have, like, really similar powers to Absorbing Man, so Carl Creel, and I wonder if we're going to be getting him back again. That would be quite cool.
Especially, I was happy to see Lincoln doing a bit more.
Yeah. It's kind of, they've got all of these really great characters, I just wish that they would explore them a little bit more, especially because Inhumans are really cool. You've got big powers. This is essentially your mutant storyline. These are your X-Men, essentially, in the respect that Marvel, in their TV shows and movies, can't use X-Men. Like, they should be doing so much more with them. There's so much more potential, but they're still kind of dancing around everything. But hopefully the back end of season 3 is gonna really kick that up a notch. But the big thing, we got the Daredevil season 2 trailer.
So excited. It's actually pretty close.
Yeah, incredibly close. But not only did we get a Daredevil season 2 trailer, we learned that this is part 1 of a trailer, and we are getting a part 2. Like, they're doing 2 massive trailers. This one had a huge focus on the Punisher, who's going to be playing a big, big part in this series. And the conflict looks really good. I have a lot of theories for where they might be going with this, but I really loved the rooftop scene where he's, like, kind of chastising him, being like, Daredevil is kind of a half measure, and being like, you hit them and they get back up, I hit them and they stay down. And I was just like, oh my god. This is going to be really interesting, because they're obviously framing Punisher as, like, a bad guy, because they're looking at it from the fact that he's, even though the people he's going after are bad guys themselves, he's kind of a serial killer, despite who he's actually killing.
Only kinda.
Yeah, it's like the Brooklyn Nine-Nine thing. Yeah, cool motive, still murder.
Still murder. I've never seen Brooklyn Nine-Nine, but I do know that one.
Yeah, I love Brooklyn Nine-Nine, for the record, so yeah. But it's just so interesting that he's basically a more extreme version of Matt. And that's what I'm gonna really, really enjoy seeing,
like,
them explore.
Season 1 Oliver Queen.
Yeah. It is kind of that exploration of, like, do you kill or do you not kill? Which is actually a huge part of Punisher and Daredevil's relationship in the comics. There is really cool article that I helped Karen with that went up on Hyperball, where she broke down the season 2 trailer. I don't want to go too much into one of the points that I noticed in the trailer, because it could be a huge spoiler. But I will say this. Watch out in season 2 for a nun, and keep an eye on the nuns in this season, because if I'm right, one of them may turn out to be incredibly important.
It's always the nuns.
Can't trust them. Just can't trust them. Yeah, but I'm really looking forward to it. And we also got our first glimpse of Elektra right at the end. And just her, hello, Matthew. I just kind of, like, I got shivers and I was like, oh my god, I'm so ready for Elektra. I'm super excited about this.
I don't have the comics knowledge about Daredevil that you do, but I'm also very excited about it, just as someone who enjoyed the Netflix series very much.
Yeah. Yeah. We've got, I keep saying it, there is just so much happening this year with, like, TV series and movies and so on. We're pretty much flat out until the end of the year now. And I'm really excited, but also I'm kind of like, who needs sleep?
overrated.
Yeah, sleep is definitely overrated. But guys, let us know what you thought of the Daredevil trailer. Let us know, actually, if you have any theories as well. And if you did read some of the spoilers from the trailer to the season 2 trailer breakdown that Karen did, let us know what you think of what we're theorizing in there. But yeah. Okay, let's move on to actual TV from this week. So, just right off the bat, no Supergirl. No Supergirl episode this week.
The Grammys were on, so no Supergirl.
I'd have preferred Supergirl.
I didn't watch the Grammys, so I would have preferred it too.
I watched the Hamilton performance. Does that count? That's literally all I watched.
That's more than I watched.
Yeah. Otherwise, I just was wholly uninterested in the Grammys, but I'm very interested in Hamilton, so I watched that, but I watched it the next morning. Still would have preferred Supergirl. But we did have some really good episodes. We'll start off with Agent Carter, because it's always easier to start off there. And we got two episodes this week. So obviously because of the State of the Union address at the beginning of the year, it shifted the schedule. So we have a couple of weeks where we're going to have two episodes because they had to reduce it into a shorter time frame because they had to delay it premiering. So to keep Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. on schedule for when that's supposed to come back, we're getting two episodes this week, two episodes next week, and then the season finale, I think, is how it works out. But this week, I feel like, I don't know if you'll agree, I feel like for me, the episodes came back on into top form. I think the episode from last week, the weirdness of that was kind of a blip, but this week's two episodes, I think, were really solid. Like, I thought they explored some pretty interesting stuff, just between, like, Dottie and Jarvis and Anna. I could take or leave the Peggy and Sosa and Wilkes stuff, the love triangle-y bit, but I did really enjoy seeing the Wilkes and Whitney stuff, where he's now a little bit separate from Peggy, and he's getting his own kind of storyline intertwined with Whitney's properly. But they kind of, for me, came back on top form. What do you think?
I totally agree with that. I was much more engaged with these two episodes. I was really, really into it. And, like, when Anna was confronting them, I was like, oh, God, like, on the edge of my chair. So I was definitely more into it. I am not digging the love story or their love triangle. That is something that needs to die. But other than that, I'm really enjoying what we had this week.
Yeah, same. My favorite part, though, and the part that I want to talk about most is Dottie. So they didn't really brush over too much the fact that Peggy got pretty seriously hurt in the last episode, which I thought they were just going to conveniently be like, hey, she's kind of okay-ish now, and she's fine, and she can keep doing things. But yeah, they kind of did explore the fact that she was quite badly hurt, and therefore what she needed to do, which was in this episode, infiltrate and see what was going on with the Council of Nine and Whitney, but she couldn't because she's hurt. So in their infinite wisdom, and the fact that they didn't have anyone else they could necessarily trust to go undercover, they choose Dottie, which, for them, probably not the smartest idea,
That was a terrible idea.
Like, this is a bad plan, guys. You do remember everything that happened in season one, right? You do.
And Peggy is like, I have a bad idea. I'm like, but I don't think you are seriously realizing how bad of an idea this is.
It's a terrible, terrible plan. However, I will say that I'm kind of glad that they went with the terrible plan, because Dottie was absolutely fantastic in this episode. Just, she had so many great lines. Like, her with Jarvis and Anna, which that was just fantastic. And just her infiltrating and kind of playing everyone. Like, that was really, really cool. And, yeah, it was kind of... I really, really liked it, because it was almost a darker riff on Peggy infiltrating the Arena Club earlier. And they kind of did some really cool parallels. So, you know, she crashes the party, she sneaks into the meeting room, she finds out some key intel. You know, it hit a lot of the similar beats of Peggy's infiltration earlier in the season. But, yeah, when Peggy infiltrated the party earlier this season, you know, the Council of Nine was still in charge. When Dottie infiltrates it, Whitney Frost has essentially killed a load of people and seized power the way that she does. So it was really interesting to see a character that has been set up thus far as being really in control of herself, really powerful, really self-assured, and really competent, losing that, not necessarily completely, but being afraid. It was really fascinating to see Dottie afraid of someone. And I just thought it was really cool. The parallels that they played between Dottie and Peggy, and then Dottie versus Whitney. And Dottie obviously doing what she needed to survive, which was essentially giving up all of the information that Whitney wanted. So, how did you feel about Dottie in this episode?
I mean, she was exactly what I expected her to be. Completely self-serving and out for her own interests. And a smartass, completely. Until she has that switch where she's utterly terrified. And I think it's kind of a testament to the show that it's, you know, the guy is threatening physical violence and she's not interested. And then the woman comes in, and the moment she walks in, Dottie is terrified. So it's just so much of the power of women is here, which is great.
Yeah, that was the thing about this episode completely, is that, you know, it was all about the women again and them being powerful and in control. And even when they're kind of at odds with each other, that being a really fascinating relationship as well. And I was so impressed. This was such a return to form for me that I'm glad that the weirdness of the episode last week was just like a blip in the radar, that it wasn't something that we were going to see continuing, because these two episodes were great. Really, really great for me.
Except for the love triangle.
Except for the love triangle. Yeah, the love triangle is just weird. But I will say that the little moment between Sosa and Peggy, where Sosa kind of opens up about the breakup and is really honest with Peggy, like, I thought that was quite touching. And the thing is I don't inherently dislike Peggy and Sosa as a couple. I think, actually, that it's very sweet that they're very, like, I think they'd be really good for each other. I really like Sosa as a character as well. I just think this love triangle is unnecessary, and I'm just really not interested in it. I just kind of feel like if they're going to go there, can they just go there? But I don't know.
Yeah, I agree. It's the least interesting part of Peggy's story is her love life.
Yeah, it really, really is. Speaking of love lives that I'm genuinely invested in and am now completely terrified about, Anna gets shot.
Yeah, and if Anna dies, we riot. We've already decided.
Basically, yeah. So she gets caught in the crossfire, basically, and she's been shot, and we kind of end the episode without really knowing if she's okay or not. And don't do this to Jarvis. Jarvis sacrifices so much, and they're so great together, and she's such an amazing character, and just their relationship is so joyful, and it's such a breath of fresh air on this show. And I would hate the... I would just hate it. I would absolutely hate this if it... And I really need there not to be a fridging of a character, please. Especially on a show that does so much good for female characters. And the fact that we've just got Anna on screen. This... just please don't do it.
Agreed.
Yeah. There's so much more that they could do with it, but... I also kind of think it'll be... I'm hoping she survives, and I'm hoping everything will work out and it'll be fine. But I kind of... I'm really interested if Anna is okay, but she's quite badly hurt, that we'll get some really, really good emotional depth out of the next episode between those two, which would be really cool. Because I really love them together. They have great chemistry. And I'm so invested in their well-being and also in their relationship. Like, it's where the love triangle with Peggy is, like, really falling flat for me. Everything about Anna and Jarvis is fantastic.
Agreed. I really love that Anna, like, she's involved in everything. And she has seen her husband and Peggy in situations that would, in a cliched story, make her jealous. Like, when they were wrestling and he was, like, on top of her, she was like, oh, he showed you this move. Like, she has no sense of jealousy towards their relationship, which I think is refreshing.
Yeah.
Because she's so comfortable in the relationship they have, and she knows what the relationship between Peggy and Jarvis is. So I think it's so refreshing that she just... The fact that Peggy and Jarvis have this very close, intimate friendship does not threaten her at all, which I think is wonderful.
I absolutely love that as well. It's such a great aspect of those two characters. And it's such a healthy relationship because, you know, you'll see a lot of jealousy in shows that focus on really, really powerful romantic relationships. But jealousy is not a healthy thing to have in your relationships. Like, it's a pretty toxic thing to happen. And their security in how they feel about each other and their trust, like, that for me is such a great thing to be showing on TV, because really, if you're gonna be, well, if you're in love with someone, you should trust them and you should celebrate and be happy for them in their other platonic relationships. So I just, please don't kill Anna. Please. I can't deal. I wouldn't be able to deal with it. I think if it turns out that she's died between this and the next episode, or we discover it in the opening of the next episode, it's going to be really difficult for me to finish this season. I think I'll be, like, emotionally distraught. It'll probably take me a few days to watch the episode.
Yeah, it just wouldn't feel like... genuine to what the story is, with the story that they are portraying, with it being about female strength.
Yeah.
That fridging a female character is pretty much the opposite of that.
Yeah, and I don't necessarily agree that they should be fridging any characters, male or female, on this show. I just, for the sake of furthering anyone's storyline. But I don't know. I really just don't want it to be Anna, regardless. So, right. I think that... Do you have anything else to add for Agent Carter for this week?
I'm afraid for Wilkes.
Yeah, I mean, it's very obvious that Whitney is going to use him in order to further her means and get what she wants. But hey, it was kind of really interesting to see her kind of touting the social justice banner and being like, I want to do this for us. I want to do it for, like, women, and I want to do it for, like, people of color. And you're like, yeah, you're saying that. You're saying that, but no. I don't think Wilkes is going to make it out of season two alive, personally.
No.
I know, but I kind of think that he's a goner at this point. But we'll see. We've got three episodes left to next week, one the week after, so.
Can we not kill the prominent character of color? That'd be cool.
Yeah, I know, but I think he's pretty much just about getting his own storyline now, which I don't think bodes particularly well, because he's kind of just been a character that kind of just helps nudge the plot along slowly and provide a little bit of resistance in this love triangle thing. So right now, it sounds so bad. If any character, they want to, like, have a body count for when Whitney goes completely crazy with her powers, then he's probably the most logical that is going to be offed. Like, he's the most expendable in terms of continuing storyline. So, and that sounds terrible. It's completely terrible to be saying that. But they haven't done enough with him to make him valuable further than this season so far. They've taken too long to make him a bigger impact. And yeah.
I'm more invested than him than Sosa. I'll just admit it.
I kind of like Sosa. I like his quiet determination and the fact
I don't dislike Sosa. I just, Wilkes has this great presence.
Yeah. I don't know. Yeah.
Like, they already faked his death once. Do we really need to go there again?
I know. Like I said, I would rather them not be fridging anyone at all, but considering how crazy Whitney's power is going and how many people are getting absorbed, the fact that we may lose someone is inevitable, I think. But we'll see. Obviously, it's back next week.
Let's get rid of Thompson.
You know, Thompson was actually fairly conflicting in this episode. I was kind of like, here is your opportunity to side completely with Sosa and Peggy, and he's kind of wavering back and forth and then getting caught up with Masters, and I'm just like, come on. I don't know. But he was kind of, you could see him feeling quite conflicted about it as well, which was fairly interesting. An interesting development for him as a character, I think. But hopefully we'll see a little bit more of that. I'm kind of hoping that we see him fully on Peggy and Sosa's side eventually by the end of the season. But who knows?
You're always more optimistic than I am.
I am incredibly optimistic. This is why I end up disappointed more often than not.
I try to warn you.
I know. But yeah, I guess that's it for Agent Carter, really.
All right, let's move on to the Arrowverse, because there's no Supergirl.
Yeah.
So Flash moved on to the second part of its Earth 2 story with the teaming up to rescue Barry from Zoom.
Yep.
And so kind of the big mystery here is we're still trying to figure out who Zoom is, but also the man in the Iron Mask. Besides Leo DiCaprio, who do we think the man in the Iron Mask is? He has an interesting way of communicating where he uses a POW form of communication of knocking, and he spells out the name Jay, and he confirms he means Jay Garrick, but when Barry tries to say that, you know, he's fine, he didn't come with us, he's back on my Earth, he's really distraught for some reason. So in the pictures, he appears to be black, but when you could see, there's a shot in the episode of his profile, and his neck looks more Caucasian, and he has a little bit of blonde hair. So I don't know. I thought it was Wally, but then we got that picture or that shot in the episode of his back, and now I'm not convinced. So what are your theories, Danya? Go.
I actually saw a hilarious tweet earlier that was basically like, the man in the Iron Mask and Flash is actually Dan. It's Gossip Girl. That's who's in the mask.
XOXO.
Like, XOXO. And I've just been laughing about that all day. But I kind of like, you wrote about it in your article this week, I think. I think it was the article this week that you wrote about the twin theory, Hunter Zolomon, Jay Garrick twin theory on Earth 2, and I'm like, I'm immediately obsessed with this theory. I think it's great.
So to clarify a bit what we're talking about, the main theory that I have seen floating around the internet about who the man in the iron mask is that it's the real Jay Garrick. Well, how does that work? According to this theory, Jay Garrick and Hunter Zolomon on Earth 2 are twins. So Hunter Zolomon is actually the one that we have gotten to know as Jay Garrick. And then the one in the mask is the real Jay Garrick, who we have never actually met. So the reason he tapped out the name Jay and then was very upset when Barry is saying, yeah, I know Jay, he's on my Earth, he's fine, and he gets really upset, is that he is the real Jay.
Either on Earth 1, I guess Jay Garrick never existed, so maybe Hunter was just an only child. Maybe he had a twin who died, like, before being born or was stillborn or something. And twins are kind of a big deal in, like, Flash lore. Jay Garrick wasn't a twin, but Wally and Linda have twins, and at some point Barry, I think, is a twin in some story. So, like, twins are a big deal in the Flash lore, so this seems like it could fit somehow.
Yeah, and I dig twin storylines as well a lot. I think they're always quite fun. And the fact that maybe one of them is good and one is evil and you've got that conflict between them, like, I think that would be incredibly fascinating, potentially. Like, they could mine quite a lot out of that after the reveal. So, yeah, that's my favorite theory that I've seen. Like, I'm really hoping that it is that. I did see someone saying that it could be Eddie as well.
Yeah, I don't think so, because Eddie was on their phone, which means they probably communicate with him.
Yeah. I don't know. There's a lot of theories kind of floating around right now, but the twin theory is my favorite.
So a few of the other theories that we'll just run down, a few that I've seen. Henry Allen, Earth 2. I don't think that's true anymore. That was my favorite one for a long time. But the fact that Barry talks to his Earth 2 mother and he's like, oh, your father and I are enjoying our tickets to Atlantis. So she's not going like, your dad's not here, he went on a hunting trip and hasn't been home in a few days, Winchester's like...
Oh my god, Caitlin!
I can't resist, but like, there seems to be nothing wrong on that end, so that sort of undercuts that theory. Another theory that I thought was kind of interesting, and also one of the most comic booky things I've ever heard, is that either Hunter or Jay, in creating Velocity 6, ended up running so fast that they split into multiple forms, one of them being like Jay, who is in the Iron Mask, and the other is Zoom.
Okay. I mean, that's very comic book.
It's very comic book. So, like, Jay has no powers, and then Zoom is obsessed with getting more powers because he is sort of the personification of Jay's obsession with getting faster. So, yeah. I don't know. I think I'm sticking with the twins one right now, but we'll see. It's interesting.
Yeah, we'll definitely see. But things just got incredibly complicated and interesting because obviously we see Jay getting sucked back through to Earth 2 when he had absolutely zero business in standing that close to the portal.
I know, the minute he went up those steps, I'm like, something's happening. He has no reason to be going up those steps. Why are you standing in front of the breach? You have no reason to stand in front of the breach. And then the hand came through, I'm like, something else is going on here.
Yeah, it was incredibly suspicious. Like, he had zero reason to be there, and yet.
were waiting for someone else to come through the breach, maybe. But the fact that they had already thrown the little bomb thing through to close it, legitimately no reason for him to go stand there.
Yeah, so suspicious.
Yeah, so Jay is officially sketchy, and going by our twin theory, he's not actually Jay.
Yeah.
Which sort of echoes last season in a way.
Yeah, they kind of like playing with identities, though, and people not being who they say they are, and mixing things up and messing around with it, so... Ugh. I can't wait for next week. I just need
Next week is the Jaws episode with Diggle. I'm very excited.
Yeah.
It's going to be fun. So, yeah. But yes, we would like to hear your theories. Who do you think Zoom or the man in the iron mask are?
I just love it. I just love that there's a man in the iron mask. I like saw it.
Literally, when I was downloading all like the promo pictures from the press site, and like they captioned who's in the picture, and it said "man in the iron mask." That was like how he was described.
Oh dear!
And I kind of started cackling. I'm like, I don't think he's Leo DiCaprio. Now we're aging ourselves with that reference.
Yeah. Yeah, we are a little bit, aren't we?
Because I did see that movie when it was in theaters.
Same. Same.
Okay. Let's move on to Arrow.
Yeah. Before we start crying over how old we're getting.
Okay, so this episode of Arrow, for me, was kind of odd, like last week's Agent Carter. Excuse me. In that, it kind of felt like a piece of a puzzle rather than actually a standalone episode. It felt more connected to everything going on around it, but it didn't feel like it stood that well by itself.
Yeah, I'll agree with that. It was almost one note in the respect of, like, you could take it or leave it. Like, you could skip this episode entirely and not really have lost anything in the story. But it wasn't that it was not enjoyable. It was just, eh.
It did some interesting things. Kind of the main thing that I took away from this episode is that it was kind of exploring the ideas of trust and honesties to the point of, like, knocking you over the head with it, which is clearly, it was like, oh, Oliver, you're so honest. It's great you can be honest with your fiance. Isn't it great that you have no secrets from Felicity? Gosh, you've become such an honest dude. And he's going, uh-huh. I'm just like, yeah, because that's not foreshadowing, like, five-shadowing, maybe. So obviously this was all about setting up next week's episode with William having been kidnapped by Damien Dark. And Barry warned you, Oliver. He warned you like 6 episodes ago. So he told you this would not go well. But something that stuck out for me was this episode had a lot of focus on Donna and Quentin, who Donna is amazing in this episode.
Yeah, like, I agree.
She's been wonderful this season. She's been a revelation this season for me. Like, yeah. The way they've just had her come in more and more, and the fact that she's so much closer with Felicity now, and the way she's kind of reacting to their engagement and everything. She's wonderful. But so when Quentin is trying to lie to her about everything, she immediately drops the cheeriness and is like, you know what? I have a con for an ex-husband. I have a BS detector. It's going off. We're done. Like, she has too much self-respect to deal with that, and I wanted to like stand up and applaud, because yeah. She was not taking any crap. And then Felicity rolls in like a second later and is like, what did you do? He's like, why did you think I did anything? Because you're a man.
That's a good line. yeah I was so impressed with this, because it's kind of that, it's the other side of that, I'm trying to do this to protect you for your own good thing, and she's like, no, we're done, that's it, just please don't play this card, please don't play this game.
It was basically Patty.
Yeah.
Like, we've had these women who are, like, being protected for their own good, and they're like, okay, bye.
Yeah.
You don't respect me enough to bring me in the loop? Talk to you later. I have more self-respect than that. So she was wonderful. Felicity, on the other hand, had some really terrible advice.
The worst advice. This is the worst advice.
It's coming from a place of knowing Lance and knowing he's a very good person and knowing the secret that he is keeping from her. So she has more information in this specific circumstance. So in that way, I'm like, okay, fair enough, because you know him very well from having worked with him. But like, if this was any other person her mother was dating, like, I really hope she wouldn't have given that same advice of like, maybe he's doing it for your own good. Maybe he really cares about you and that's why he's lying to you. Maybe you should give the lying liar who lies another chance. Like, Really, Felicity, this is terrible advice.
Such bad advice. It's kind of like, don't. Like, I get, like you said, yeah, okay, she knows Quentin quite well. She knows what's been going on, and she knows that it's realistically, it is in this instance the best way to protect them, because if Damian Dark doesn't know that he can get these people as leverage because you don't see them interacting in public, that in this specific instance, keeping her out of the loop and keeping distance may actually be a way to protect her. But this is a very specific instance because we've seen Damian Dark taking people who are very closely linked, who aren't necessarily involved in everything, and using them as leverage. But still terrible, terrible advice for your mother who is dating. Like, no, it's okay, Mom.
If it was literally any other person, I hope this is not the advice she would be giving. I really hope she'd be like, well, he's an asshole. Screw him. You can do better than someone who's lying to you. Like, I really hope if it was literally any other person, that she would say that. But the way it came off is like, that's really terrible advice. Please don't say that, actually. Also in this episode, Oliver and Felicity have their engagement party. It's super cute. Dawn is very excited about it and is wearing an adorable pink dress. And Curtis and his husband come in. I love that we get to see him again. See Paul.
Yeah.
And really Curtis cute. Brings Felicity an engagement present, which is a spinal implant that, when powered by their new all-powerful battery, should be able to stimulate her spine to help her walk. And I'm sort of like, in the moment, I got a little teary because that was such a thoughtful thing for him to be working his butt off for. Like, for him to care about her that much.
Yeah.
But then, story-wise, I started going, wait, if this works, what was the point of the whole shooting Felicity and putting her in a wheelchair?
Yeah, agreed. I don't understand why we need to resolve this quickly. In fact, I don't necessarily understand why it needs to be resolved at all. Like, I understand that it's a very difficult thing that she's going to have to adjust to, no longer being able-bodied and having to come to terms with having a disability. But also, I don't understand entirely why this should be a bad thing either. It's not like it's made her any less capable. So I'm kind of a little bit like, this just, it's not sitting right with me. Like, Felicity can still be a badass in a wheelchair and still be as competent and as important to the team as she's always been. Just because she's in a wheelchair doesn't mean that she can't be.
Like, she's only really struggled with it in that first episode.
Yeah.
I guess it was the second episode back. Like, yeah, that was really the only time she struggled with it in that episode. Then she was like, okay, I accept it, and has not had a single issue with it since.
Yeah, which I think is really refreshing, because it's kind of that, it's kind of another aspect of representation as well. Like, I don't know, I just think they're gonna need to be careful with where they're going with this, because it's a similar thing to what they did in the comics, where they completely retconned Barbara from being disabled to being able to walk and run around again, because I think they didn't necessarily know where to go with her when she was Oracle and in the wheelchair, so they kind of retconned it and made her Batgirl again. And they need to be really careful about how they approach this. Like, I don't know, it just, I don't see the point.
If they play with it where, like, it doesn't end up working and she had gotten these hopes up, and then they have to explore the possibility that in the back of her mind she had been going, well, like what Oliver says, like, we live in a world where one of our best friends runs so fast that he can travel through time. Like,
yeah,
there are things out there. So maybe in the back of her mind she's been kind of thinking that things could change, and then maybe this doesn't work and she has to deal with maybe a new reality that, oh, maybe we're not going to find a solution. That I think I could be okay with, but like, just saying and now she can walk really leaves a sour taste in my mouth.
Yeah, same, completely agree with that.
So, I mean, we don't know where they're going with this. They may not have her walk. I always figured that they would have her walk eventually, but I was sort of hoping it would be a while longer.
Yeah. I mean, even if, for example, it's a temporary thing, like it can only stimulate long enough that she can walk very short distances, maybe that would be something. And she, for the rest of the time, is in the chair. Like, it's a very temporary thing. Like,
or it takes a lot out of her, so she only does it when it's super important.
Yeah, like, entirely necessary. But
like, I could see, like, walking down the aisle.
That you wedding. Kind of, you picked up the yeah. direction that in my yeah. head I was going, like, it could be what could help her walk down the aisle, but that's literally, like, the extent of what she could use it for. Yeah, I guess we'll see where they go with it.
So I guess just the prospect of that makes me nervous.
Yeah.
So, but we'll reserve judgment until we actually see where they're going with it. But they are treading on thin ice with this potential story. Yeah. So any other thoughts about Arrow?
No, it was pretty much a low-key kind of episode, so. Yes.
Well, let's go to the one that was not.
Oh my god.
Legends of Tomorrow, which Donnie and I both thought was delightful.
Yeah, we're bringing that word back. No, seriously, I watched this just before we started recording. Guys, I am seriously loving this show. Like, it's unbelievable how much joy I'm getting out of Legends of Tomorrow. It is just so much fun. I'm just having a great time watching it. Oh, and this episode kind of fluctuated between being, like, ridiculously funny and great, and also having some moments that got me, like, really teary-eyed and kind of, like, was breaking my heart. Just all around really good second part to the episode from last week for me.
Yeah, I want to say, like, what this show has really succeeded with in having such a big cast that I feel like other shows that have really big casts maybe haven't done as well. I'm thinking of, like, Glee. is that they bring different permutations of the cast together each week. So, like, yeah. For a week, you have Sarah and Kendra, and then the next week, like this last week was Sarah and Kendra. This week it's Sarah and Leonard, and then you this week you had Kendra and Jax, who hadn't really interacted, and you had Mick and Ray, which is a totally unexpected pairing, but yeah. Before it was like Ray and Stein, and it was Ray and Snart. Like, every week they're matching them up differently, and it gives us new insights into their characters by the way they bounce off each other. And I find that so fascinating and so interesting every week to see who's going to pair off with who.
And just Leonard and Sarah, man.
My Captain Canary.
Yeah. I've got a new ship, I think. There's something about them that just really works so well together. And I really love they've both had such difficult pasts. They've both suffered huge amounts of trauma. They both see themselves as, I guess, almost not worthy of the title of being heroes or legends or whatever Rip is trying to put on them. They are just trying to be. And the fact that he was bringing out her humanity more and reminding her of it, and he was that kind of connection back and basically reminding her, he was basically like, I'm just hoping to remind you of what you already know, sort of thing. And I love them together so much.
They've had, like, a really interesting dynamic since the pilot, and I'm glad that it's getting explored more. And it was so surprising to me to see him be the voice of reason.
Yeah.
Like, of all the people you expect to be the voice of reason in an episode, you don't expect it to be Captain Cold.
Yeah. He's just, we spoke about this in the last episode, but he's just really stepped up to being a character that I'm, like, stupidly invested in. Like, I'm so into him as a character. He's had such amazing development from his introduction on The Flash till now. Like, I'm so into it. And he had so many great lines in this episode again. The one where he's like, I've never found a building that I couldn't break into, and just everything. He's just...
And of course, the required Prison Break reference. It's not my first prison break.
I love that. It just... This episode was so great. And also him in the Russian prison officer uniform, just... Oh my god. Oh my god. That did really funny things to my heart. I was like, why am I into this? Why is this a thing that I'm, like, stupidly into? Probably gonna blame the fact that I've been watching Men from U.N.C.L.E. so much, so at the moment I'm, like, super into the Cold War narrative and stoic Russians. So him in a Russian uniform thing is just, it just did really funny things for me. It's a problem. It's a problem. I have to deal with it.
It's funny. So this week, basically, we had Sarah and Leonard break into the gulag to rescue Stein and Ray and Mick. Ray and Mick are being tortured to make Stein give up his secrets, and then Rip orders Sarah to kill Stein if it looks like the rescue is going to go south. And Sarah is initially like, okay, like, I'm an assassin, it's what I do. And it's Leonard Snart, of all people, who is, like, talking her down from it and continues talking her down from it until she can't bring herself to take the shot. And then you get Kendra and Jax eventually coming in to help solve the problem. And I was sort of confused with, like, why Jax was hobbling around, because they were like, he tore his ACL. I'm like, well, I tore my ACL, but I had surgery and it was fine after a year. So I was like, did he not have surgery? And if so, he should not be able to move, like, at all, because after I busted my knee, I was in a giant brace until I had surgery. I know this is really minor, but because I had the same issue, I was like, why is he hobbling? Like, ACL surgeries are really common, and after a year, you're pretty much fully healed. So, totally random, came to mind because I've had the same issue. Also, we got to see Sisko, quote-unquote, which was delightful because Stein pretty quickly realizes he's not the right Sisko because he's a little too formal, he's a little too neat, and his snark isn't quite up to par with Sisko's. And he's like, wait, you're not Sisko.
Yeah, it's like... It's like you stepped out of GQ magazine. In fact, your shirt is probably ironed. You're not Sisko.
Your hair is neatly tied back. Like, you're not Sisko.
Yeah.
Oh, that was great. I loved seeing him. I kind of wish he was the real Sisko, but that was fun. Like, Stein and Sisko are kind of like DCTV science bros. So that was kind of fun that he could tell that quickly, because we know between seasons 1 and 2 that Stein joined the group at Star Labs, and they got pretty close, so I enjoyed that. But then at the end of the episode, they get chased by Kronos again. Like, he's pretty much just the plot device to propel them to a different time. And they get hit and knocked out of the time stream and end up in what we know from outside information is 2046, and... they end up in Star City. There's a building that was formerly Palmer Tech. It is now Smoke Tech, which, okay. And if Felicity and Oliver got married, Felicity kept her name.
Yeah.
Just saying.
Maybe hi. Oliver took her name.
Oh, I like it. Oliver Smoke. I like it. And then they run into a Green Arrow, who is most definitely not Oliver Queen.
Yep.
And it's kind of amazing because that is Connor Hawke. So the question is, they have said that Connor Hawke is not going to be the child of Oliver and Sandra Hawke, like in the comics. That doesn't tell us whether he's going to be Oliver's son at all, because he's mixed race. So he could be Oliver's child with a black woman. He could be Diggle's child. He could be somebody else's child. We don't know.
He could be adopted.
He could be adopted. That is true. We don't know. But, like, we just don't have enough information. He very well could be Oliver's son with another woman. He could be Oliver's adopted son. He could be somebody else's son. We don't know. But he's obviously not William.
No. No, he is not. And he is definitely the Arrow of this time.
Yes. So next week, we're going to find out more about what happened to Star City. I guess the whole premise is that they don't save the world and they never come back from their mission. And this is what happens when they don't come back. So they are clearly becoming important to the time stream the way they had not been before.
Yeah.
This is what happens when they don't come back. So
like things are escalating so quickly.
Yes, exactly. And then they're going to meet one-armed Oliver with the beard.
The beard is... I was saying to Caitlin prior to recording, there's something about this beard that's really doing it for me. I don't know what it is with guys and really terrible beards right now. Like, this rat's nest of a beard on their face. Because Luke Skywalker and Mark Hamill are also really doing it for me as well right now. So I think I've hit a stage in my life where apparently older bearded men are like my thing right now.
Speaking of aging yourself, Danya.
I know.
Yeah. I'm super excited for Legends next week.
Yeah, same.
Okay. Delightful!
Yeah, what wasn't delightful was watching Rey getting beat up, but not only that, Rey deflecting from Mick getting tortured and taking the brunt of everything and being like the better man, the team player. Like, I just, my heart broke because obviously up until that point, like a lot of the team, like really kind of rag on Rey a lot, and it's becoming like more and more evident that like he's kind of their, not necessarily their punching bag in respect to like actually physically hurting him themselves, but he's definitely their verbal punching bag a lot of the time. Like, they do take the mick out of him quite a lot. But this episode, like, I was just like, wow.
But he got Mick's respect and probably a degree of loyalty that Mick probably doesn't want to acknowledge, because he's saying like we're even now because he brings Rey out. But I imagine he's going to have that respect for him in the future.
Yeah, agreed. And it was actually really nice to see Mick away from Leonard and getting a little bit more development, because of all of the characters so far, he's been the most underdeveloped. We haven't spent a lot of time with him, like learning his motivations, learning about who he is outside of lighting things on fire. So it was just really nice to spend a little bit of time with him.
Yep, and we gotta love that it was Wentworth Miller breaking into a prison to get Dominic Purcell out.
I know.
Good times.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess that's it, unless we have anything else to add.
I don't think so.
Oh, so... yeah, let us know what if you're looking forward to seeing a bearded one-armed Oliver next week, guys. Because we are. I am. I'm definitely looking forward to it.
Get in my eyeball.
Right. Got a couple of movie headlines. Not anything massive. Deadpool continues to shock Hollywood, essentially, because it's still crushing box office records. So we did mention, I think, on the last episode that it had broken the domestic record for an R-rated movie on its opening night. It has broken the box office records for an R-rated movie worldwide now, and it's taken $260 million. Now, for a film that cost $58 million, that's pretty impressive.
That's pretty impressive for an R-rated film, period.
Yeah. So, you know, we're almost certainly seeing Deadpool 2. Simon Kinberg has also said of the potential upcoming X-Force movie that is also likely to be rated R, seeing as they've had so much success with Deadpool. And if you've listened to our Deadpool special, we talked a little bit about X-Force and who the X-Force are in respect to the wider Marvel Universe with the X-Men. So an R-rated movie would make sense for, like, this continuation of Deadpool's story into a team movie. So listen to the Deadpool special once you've seen Deadpool, and we get into a little bit more about X-Force as well. But yeah, again, Deadpool is very successful, I think, is the takeaway here, which we spoke about a little bit on the last regular episode.
And it shocks nobody except the out-of-touch Hollywood people.
Yeah, it's the same Hollywood people who thought Kylo Ren was going to be the big, huge star of Star Wars, and actually everyone just wants stuff to do with Rey. Like, you know, catch up, Hollywood and Hollywood merchandisers. You know, we've been telling you this stuff for a long time. It's about time to listen to us. Hashtag, where's my Black Widow movie? Yeah. The other bit of news that we got is Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 has begun filming. So we had a couple of behind-the-scenes cast photos, but filming is now fully underway. And to kind of celebrate, they released a new, like, photo where we have, like, little baby Groot on Drax's shoulder, and we see Star-Lord and Gamora and Rocket, and it's all pretty cool. But they also announced some great casting news. So only one of these roles is, like, of who they're playing is confirmed. So we are getting Pom Clemente, who you may know from Old Boy if you ever watched that film. She is going to be playing a character called Mantis, who is really interesting because she is a character who is half Vietnamese, half German, and she was left in a temple in Vietnam of the alien priests of Parma, which is a sect of the Kree. So we've got a really clear connection to Guardians here in respect to alien races. So it's really cool that we're getting another female character coming in, but also one that's quite interesting. And yeah, we also have another female actor. We've got an actress, Elizabeth Debicki, who is from The Great Gatsby and Everest. No news on who she's going to be playing, but we also are going to be getting Chris Sullivan, and Kurt Russell is finally confirmed as joining the cast. Obviously, the rumors were that he's going to be playing Star-Lord's father. I think we can safely assume at this point that that's true. But turns out that those rumors that we were going to maybe be getting more ladies, possibly, in this movie, kind of true.
We'll just see how big of a role they play.
Yeah. So, yeah, filming is underway. So chances are we'll get slightly more news as we continue moving forward. But that's it for movie headlines.
It was an overwhelming amount.
So much. Yeah, I think I'm kind of really worried because this feels almost like a calm before the storm. Like, Civil War is coming up very, very soon, and Batman vs. Superman, and it just feels like everything's ramped down in anticipation of these movies and Civil War potentially breaking everyone. So, yeah, we're in the eye of the hurricane right now. Suddenly it's just all gonna go crazy. But yeah, so Comic Corner. This week I'm doing something a little bit different. Didn't really get any inspiration from any of the news or anything for a Comic Corner to do, so I thought, hey, we're coming up to the end of the second month of 2016 now, and you know, we've got a couple of new runs happening, so I thought I'd give you some recommendations to add to your pull list if you are looking for a new comic or something to read regularly. So, these are a few that I would recommend that I'm highly enjoying right now. So, first one I've got is Captain Marvel. So, Fezzikus and Butters have taken over from Kelly Sue DeConnick on this title. And despite some concerns from fans, it really hasn't suffered from the switch. They've got an interesting story going on right now about Carol's investigations into a ship that's sort of a living organism, as well as a conflict between her and her second-in-command, which has been raising some interesting questions. And it's definitely one you'll want to keep an eye on, because Fezzikus and Butters are doing really intriguing things with Danvers. Next one I've got is Daredevil. So Charles Soule has been doing really great things on Daredevil, and with season 2 fast approaching, it's probably a great time to pick up this run, especially as he's going to be reigniting the feud between Daredevil and Punisher in an upcoming miniseries. But much like the TV series, Soule is focusing on more street-level stories that are really quite solid. And if, like me, you're anticipating Soule's upcoming Poe Dameron comic, this is a really good place to start to get a taste of his comic book writing. Next one I've got is Hellcat, which, yep, hot off the heels of the Jessica Jones series, this is actually a brand new series featuring Patsy Walker, which, funnily, is actually a spin-off from the Charles Soule pen She-Hulk series, which was also fantastic. But this one is really smartly written, and Kate Leth has done Hellcat justice so far, and it has a great balance of humor and butt-kicking. There's also a really fantastic essay in the debut issue about all-ages comics, which everyone should really take the time to read. Next one I've got is Batgirl. So Cameron Stewart and Batgirl are seriously firing on all cylinders right now. This series is the best when Stewart is just having a lot of fun with it, and right now that's exactly what's happening. There's a huge focus on Batgirl's friendships right now, and the team-ups are an absolute delight, and it's just a really hugely empowering series. Next one I've got is Squirrel Girl, and why are you not reading Squirrel Girl yet? Seriously. They're currently wrapping up Squirrel Girl's adventures in the 60s, and she's kind of teaming up but not teamed up with Doctor Doom right now. It's ridiculous, it's fun, it doesn't take itself too seriously, and I'm completely in love with it. And if you manage to make it cover to cover without laughing, there is something wrong. Squirrel Girl is just pure, abundant joy. And finally, I've got Miss Marvel. And yes, I know we've recommended this one a lot on the show, but I cannot stress enough how important G. Willow Wilson's Miss Marvel series continues to be. Kamala Khan is a character that has captured the hearts of so many readers, and especially in the current political climate, this series offers an important narrative on Islamophobia and the mob mentality that we see in the media and in society. So, and just when you think the writing couldn't get smarter or more profound, Wilson will continue to surprise you, and it's definitely one of the best comics out there right now. And that's it. Yes, I do realize that I did not recommend Hawkeye this time around. This might surprise... Okay. Make sure you're sitting down, guys. I'm actually thinking of dropping Hawkeye from my pull list. Yeah. It took a turn recently that I'm not entirely comfortable with, and is so far and away from the Clint Barton that I have loved for years that I'm at the point where I'm giving it another issue or two, and if it doesn't turn around, I may actually be dropping it, and that should tell you a lot about my mindset of the series right now, if you were wondering why Hawkeye didn't come up as a recommendation when I always recommend it when I have the chance to. Yeah. Right. Feedback. Yay! We got a couple of really cool bits of feedback this week. So thanks, guys, again, for getting in touch with us by comments, by emails, by Twitter. So as always, if you want to get hold of us, you can do it on our Twitter account, which is at Hero Hype Podcast. Email address, which is herohypepodcast@gmail.com. Or, again, leave a comment for us on this post when it goes up on hypeable.com. But Cassie left a comment for us on Twitter and said, "Man, I totes respect Mama Smoke's ditzy exterior now. It's just a defense mechanism. Seeing her be real is chilling." Yeah, we have a lot of love for Mama Smoke.
Like I said, she's a revelation.
Yeah, she really is.
All right, so we got a couple of emails not happy with us for how much we're bashing on Wynn from Supergirl. So we're going to read a little bit from an email that we got from Sarah, but we also got a similar, much longer email from Matthew Todros. So thank you both for emailing us. And we just wanted to let you know that we both have read your emails and read them, the full thing, all that. So Sarah says, the one thing I'm a little conflicted about is your Win bashing when you discuss Supergirl. I definitely experienced a few cringeworthy moments with him as well, but I also know that some of my favorite characters on various shows started out as people that I didn't particularly like in the beginning. Give him some more time before you judge him for good. This show had 12 episodes so far, and to say that you're done with him seems a little harsh and unfair to me, or something to say about Malcolm Merlyn or Grant Ward. Otherwise, I really enjoy your show, and keep up the good work, ladies.
Yeah, Matthew's longer email was amazing as well. The three comments that we got, because we read one of the comments previously as well, makes me want to go back and watch the episodes that we've had so far when I get the chance to, and see if watching it all in one go, instead of getting it isolated in small chunks, might change the way that I read it. Because I'm seeing a lot of people taking an opposing view, so I'm wondering if it might change if I go back. Like, if I'll start looking at it differently if I get it all in one go, and I can see it all linked together really in really quick succession. I'm really interested to see if that would actually change the reading of it or not for me, because at the moment I'm still really uncomfortable with the direction that he's going in, and I just want to see if rewatching might change my opinion at all. I don't know.
I don't know either. I find him overly cringeworthy.
Yeah. I'm curious to go back and just give it another shot and see if I see things a bit differently, but that might be something that I'll do in a couple of weeks' time when I've got a little bit more time. Because right now, I'm too busy trying to keep up with everything.
I know, right? It's not feasible to do a rewatch in the middle of a season.
No, it's really not. The other comment that we got was on the Hyperbole post from Cassie. And I don't know if this was in respect to me talking about the Civil War trailer that we got and me being like, where's Spider-Man? They've made such a big deal of it. Like, I think this might be off the back of that, but Cassie says, I'm really disappointed by Spider-Man in the MCU. I think it would have had a bigger impact if they had been like, guess what? Andrew Garfield is part of the MCU. New Spider-Man movie in 2017. Sony plus Marvel equals BFFs. Then we wouldn't have to worry about an origin story or reintroducing yet another Peter Parker. They could have aged Peter up a bit, so instead of being 18, now a few years have passed and he's 23, or maybe even older because Garfield's in his 30s now, and an adult, and with MJ, so that he wouldn't look so ridiculous fighting alongside the rest of the characters. Then, for a total twist, just when everyone's all excited about Spider-Man being MCU canon, and the next Amazing Spider-Man movie coming out in 2017, and everything is awesome, they could just kill him in Civil War. It would simultaneously create a lot of impact, a character everyone knows and has already been established with several movies by this actor, without actually hurting any of the main heroes, no drama over Tony or Steve dying. Then the credit scene could be a teenage boy's room, a boy in shadows, the camera is looking over his shoulder, watching a news report of this just in. Peter Parker recently revealed as New York's very own Spider-Man has been killed. We then hear a woman's voice off screen, Miles, dinner time, and we see webbing shoot out and hit the power button on the TV as the boy yells, coming, Ma! Boom! Mind's blown! Turns out that untitled 2017 Spider-Man movie is starring Miles Morales. Cue the nerdgasms. The internet explodes. They wouldn't even have to properly cast Miles yet. Fuck, I'm nerding out over my own idea. I am so much the disappointment. Le sigh. Baby Peter Parker, here we come. I think, actually, I don't know if it was back when Marimer was still a regular on here, but we actually bandied about this idea, I think, previously about this being something similar for how they could have made Miles work, which is that they could have kept Andrew Garfield as Peter Parker, or kept a slightly older or aged up Peter Parker, and then reintroduced Spider-Man through Miles going with the ultimate Spider-Man thing where Peter dies and Miles takes over. So, yeah, I mean, that's not what we're getting, and now I'm kind of, like, I'm really sad because I think that would have really worked, and, yeah. Yeah. I don't know, but we're getting baby Peter Parker. That's what we've got, so...
Oh, yet another Peter Parker.
I know, but... Right, question of the week. We got a couple of you answering, so apparently Funkos are very, very popular. Who'd have thunk it?
Just always talk about Funko.
Yeah. So we asked you what Funko Pop figure would you like to see released next. Anthony Ciano said, I would love to see an Agent Venom new suit from Guardians of the Galaxy comic series. #questioning3s. That would be really cool. There, I think actually Agent Venom, actually I think there are some characters that really suit Funkos a lot better than others, and I think that would be one I think that would work really, really well.
Sarah says, I would love pop figures of Sisko and Martin Stein. Oh my god. A Sisko would be precious. It would absolutely have to be a bobblehead.
It would definitely need to be a bobblehead. But the thing would be is, what t-shirt do you put him in?
He has a bunch of extra changes of t-shirts.
Yeah, just like so many variations for it that would be great. You just have a whole series of Siskos.
He needs the shirt from the season 2 premiere that was the red one with all the little lightning bolts.
Yeah.
He wore it a flash day. That's the one he needs to wear.
Yep.
Because I want that shirt for myself.
I'm sure you could find it somewhere.
Off to Etsy.
Yay. Michaela, is it Palante? I'm so sorry if I'm pronouncing your names wrong, by the way. You feel free to shout at me on Twitter. But Michaela says, I need a Miss Marvel Kamala Khan Funko Pop figure. Also loving Supergirl, really liked seeing Krypton. Yeah, I agree. And also a Miss Marvel Kamala Khan would be really cool, especially as we're getting a Carol Danvers one, so.
And then Cassie says, I was going to say Sailor Moon, but apparently that's already going to be a thing. Yes, it is!
Yeah!
I can't really think of any. Pretty much everyone I want is already one, unless Google is lying to me, which I'm starting to suspect that they are.
Yeah, I really want that Sailor Moon one with the Luna. Like, really badly. So badly. Oh, I can't wait.
Sailor Jupiter is my queen, so I kind of need a Sailor Jupiter.
I love Sailor Jupiter as well, but I don't know. I always really loved Sailor Moon. Like, yeah. I think it's because she's so short.
Well, I'm tall, so...
Hey, there we go.
And Sailor Jupiter is tall, so there you go.
Would you like to ask this week's question of the week, Caitlin?
Absolutely. We are asking you guys this week, which character would you love to see cross over on Legends of Tomorrow next? As we saw Sisko this week, and we're going to see Oliver next week. So who from the Arrowverse would you like to see?
Answers on a postcard or in a Twitter comment, but it's close enough.
Or a hackable comment or an email.
But that's it for another week, guys. Thank you so much for tuning in and listening to us. We'll be back next week. And as always, I'm Danya.
And I'm Caitlin.
And we'll see you on the next episode. Bye, guys.
Bye.
Ice, baby.
Vanilla ice, baby. Stop, collaborate, and listen. Ice is back with his brand new invention.
I couldn't help myself because that's been stuck in my head since I mentioned it earlier, so.
Oh, that song is like the pinnacle of high art. Got a problem? Check out the hook while my DJ revolves it. Ice, baby.
Too cold.
like a ninja cut like a razor blade. That's my favorite line of the whole song. Also, killing your brain like a poisonous mushroom.
Karen would like that.
Oh, God, the video. It was like the most 90s thing I've ever seen.
Yeah.
I love he's like dancing on a green screen in like the most 90 clothes. It's amazing. Like, how is this not the pinnacle of high art?
Yo, man, let's get out of here. Word to your mother. Ice, ice.